Welcome to the Midnight Frightcast, episode number 96. I am one of your hosts, intern Josh, hanging out today with the doctor of filmonomics himself, Greg.
Hey, hey, hey.
The scream queen, Maddie.
The what queen?
The scream queen, Maddie.
I heard squeak. Okay. I heard squeak.
Yeah, I was like, wow, bro.
Scream queen, Maddie.
Hi, everyone.
And the doctor of everything else, Patrick.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Oh, we are going to kick this episode off with a little bit of, I feel like we need like a music segment here because it's a new segment. We're going to talk trailer trash. And today we are going to cover a trailer that for a film that I didn't know. I just kind of came upon when we did our whole like 2024 what you're looking forward to thing. This movie didn't come up. This film just kind of randomly came up on my Facebook page. So I clicked the link and followed along. Lovely, Dark, and Deep. So watch the trailer for that. I'm going to chat for a second, and I'm going to pick on Greg because I like picking on Greg.
I like what this film is trying to do. However, I fear that it might be poorly executed. Once again, the trailer did exactly what it was supposed to do to hook the viewers and bring them into the theaters. Obviously, it's not out in theaters yet, but I want to check it out to see what they're going to do. However, there's aspects of it that are coming out or that are in the trailer that I'm not so sure about. Namely, the person climbing down from the tree segment that they showed there. So, I want to see it. I'm not sure if I'm going to pull the trigger though.
Okay. I'll go with Maddie, but then Maddie and Greg had this really great conversation in our messenger. So I want to relay back to that as well. But Maddie, yes. What you thinking?
I kind of had similar thoughts as Greg. I think this film looks really cool, but I'm also getting vibes of we're showing all the cool spooky stuff in our trailer and there's going to be nothing in the movie. This is kind of, if they do a good job, I'm going to really dig this movie. I love shit out in the forest. I love kind of that whole vibe, especially because I'm out in the forest a lot. So that kind of stuff, I feel like, resonates with me a little more. But I'm definitely going to see this. I'm going to cross my fingers that they didn't give the whole they didn't show the whole titty just in the trailer and the rest of it's going to be in the movie. But yeah, I kind of got those vibes.
Patrick.
Yeah. I'm kind of agreeing with Maddie there. Wondering if they're showing all the great stuff in the trailer. And to me, that kind of brings up a question is why are trailers so long now? I remember trailers being like right around a minute or so. Mm-hmm. Now you find that they're well over 2 minutes long. Right. And it's like a mini movie in itself, a very, very short film. And, you know, are they giving away all the good parts so that when I go there, I am not seeing anything new? I know sometimes that in trailers, they drop in scenes that never even make it into the movie. They're using what they have. But I'm intrigued by this. Looking at it, it kind of gives me that isolated feeling of what I had with the movie Last Shift, where it was basically one person with things happening just to that one person. So it kind of looks like a minimal cast film, and we're allowing one actor to just shine incredibly. And if that's the case, I'm all on board for it.
Yeah, and a little background, Lovely, Dark, and Deep is a backcountry ranger that's traveling alone through the wilderness. She's hoping to uncover the origins of a tragedy that's been haunting her. I know Maddie pointed out that this girl looks way too young to be having this job as a forest ranger. I don't know anything about that, but I know that was one thing that you brought up, Maddie.
Yeah, it's not really she's too young to be a forest ranger. A lot, you'll see a lot of park ranger is one of those terms that kind of means a lot of different jobs and a lot of different settings. In Nebraska, we have conservation officers, which would serve as a park ranger. Normally in these types of movies, a park ranger is a member of the park police. So they're a little bit, they have kind of enforcement because there's enforcement and then there's interpretive and like tour guide, more park rangers. But a Bat County Ranger is somebody who patrols the back, less populated, less popular areas of parks. They're only in the huge parks that have these big Bat County ranges. Those jobs are so fucking competitive. You are not going to get a girl in her early 20s because you need years, and I mean years,
yeah,
of experience, of networking, of everything to get into these jobs. Because these are some of the most competitive jobs in the country. There's not that many of them. And they're going to people because this is a very dangerous job. Fun fact, at one point, park rangers had the highest death rate of any federal agent. So this is not a job they're going to give to a 25-year-old girl. The average Bat County Ranger is actually a 41. So it's just something, since this is my field, something I've worked for, it's just something I was like, bitch, you are not getting Miss 22-year-old whatever. I know that's not appealing to the horror audience. No one wants to see 41-year-old divorced Bill out there in the woods by himself. But, like, come on. Like, anybody who knows that is going to be like, what is this child doing in there? I don't know. Just pet peeves.
Yeah, for sure. Patrick, for me, kind of just hit this, you know, hit the nail on the head for what he said, was which was, which is what made this actually, this trailer actually kind of exciting for me and kind of got me like pretty stoked for this one. We all loved, as far as I remember, Last Shift. The tone of Last Shift and the just kind of the feel of that film and how isolated it made you feel, and just like those bits where like you just don't know like if what you're seeing is real and what's actually, you know, not there. And and so totally, like, this film was just Last Shift in the wilderness for me. So when I was watching it, I was like, first I was just going to share with Greg, because I was like, Greg, check out Last Shift in the forest. But then I thought, like, we should talk about this. So it's the filmmaker's feature film debut, which is kind of cool. And seems like it's making kind of a big deal right now. So it's definitely a film that when it is able to be seen, I will chase this one for sure. And we'll try not to compare it to Last Shift, but again, just watching the trailer, it's just got those same tones.
I also want to touch on something we mentioned on our last podcast when we were talking about Cocaine Bear taking a small true story and turning it into something new. There are hundreds of people that actually disappear in state parks throughout the United States, like every year. If you type in missing state parks, you will go down the weirdest rabbit hole ever. So like kind of the same thing where they're taking like this little blip from a true story and expanding on it. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Less humorous, yeah, than Cocaine Bear, though.
What's that, Greg?
Less humorous than Cocaine Bear.
Yeah, not as funny.
I hope this girl knows what to do if she runs into the Cocaine Bear. That's all I'm saying.
Give it a dollar bill.
She did look a little bit more convincing in her position than the ranger in Cocaine Bear, who was entirely inept at her job.
Agreed. Wow. Very much agreed.
Yeah.
That's why I said you have the interpretive park rangers and you have like the game warden park rangers who like have a bunch of training and law enforcement and can use a gun, and then you have, yeah.
So this is given a 2023 release date, but I'm pretty sure that's a festival release date. I can't find a release date for theatrical or streaming or anything, but 2023 was their, I'm gonna guess, like I said, their festival release date. So, cool.
Wait, I thought it said it was coming to VOD, like, sometime soon. Am I crazy?
Research while we talk. How do we burn some time?
I know, I'm looking. I'm
we can edit this part out.
No, we keep everything.
Yeah, no, we don't.
Show everybody, like, hey, this is how...
This is how this the sausage how made. Gets made.
Yeah.
So, okay, I swear it said it. We'll come back to this, but, like, I swear it said that it was, like, coming pretty soon.
Here it says VOD on February 22nd.
That's right, okay. Yeah. I was cool. Like, it's
it, cool. It released in Canada in July of 2023 at the Fantasia Festival.
Okay. So festival release, but he says February 27th?
22nd.
Okay, cool. Well, that's coming soon, so look for that movie. And check it out. Check out the trailer, though. Just YouTube that and check out the trailer and let us know what you think. Moving on to the topic, because we got a topic this time around. We found one. So because of the movie that we watched this this week, we're going to talk about, right quickly, we're going to talk about iconic horror masks, kind of what makes a killer horror mask, you know, iconic, what makes it scary. What are, you know, some of your favorite ones from past films? Just going to chat on that really quickly, and then we'll move on to the movie. But iconic horror masks, when you think of those, right? You're going to go to Ghostface, right? You're going to go to Michael Myers and Jason Voorhees and all those masks. But what about the ones that you don't, you know, that don't end up on the Mount Rushmore of horror masks?
Yeah, because I think that's like two entirely different things, is what's iconic and what our favorites might be.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, some of the lesser known ones are more terrifying than what has been established with Halloween and Friday the 13th.
Right.
Yeah, because there are definitely creepier masks out there than mm-hmm. Jason's hockey mm-hmm. mask.
Yeah.
And then there's the whole thing, like, why is the killer wearing a mask in the first place? Like, is it because they want to hide their identities because they're a fucking mongoloid? Like, because we had that whole thing in the 80s. Like, I feel like The Rise of the Mask was definitely like that 70s, 80s slasher films. Are newer movies like having a masked killer anymore, or is that kind of like fallen out of fashion? I couldn't tell you the last like masked horror movie person I saw. It's all like serial killers. Mm-hmm. Like, that's kind of the vibe now.
Yeah.
Or haunted ass kids toys.
Haunted ass kids toys. What'd you call that, Maddie? The rise of the what? The rise of the horror mask?
Rise of the mask.
I just felt like that like iconic period where like a lot of killers had masks, like in that 70s, 80s mm-hmm. kind of thing. I don't feel like we have that many of those movies anymore. We just like, did the mask die with the slasher film, or are we still seeing that? I don't feel like we see a lot of horror villains in masks anymore.
Well, and I almost wonder if the 70s and the 80s slasher masks kind of capitalized on what the mask was supposed to do. I guess for me, just kind of jumping into the topic, the lesser detail that the mask has, I feel you get a more terrifying result. You know, you look at Michael Myers was just the white face and the hair you could have done with or without, but there was no detail to the face. And I think that kind of elicits the unknown of what this person is. Why are they wearing this mask? What are they planning on doing, regardless of whether they're holding a butcher knife, machete, or whatever in their hand. But you look at the movies that have given us masks or mask killers since then, and the more detail they put into it, the goofier it is. I love the Scream movies, but I feel like the Ghostface Killer was one of the goofier masks ever done in slasher films, and especially in the movie that we watched for our episode today, one of the dumbest fucking masks I have ever seen. And it kind of takes you out of the movie when you see something like that, because, okay, I understand what you're here to do, but you look like a fucking douchebag. Literally, it
reminded me of Johnny Bravo without the sunglasses.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And it's like, what? Why am I supposed to be scared of you? You look like a goddamn tool.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of masks kind of, like, horror masks fall into, like, a couple categories. Like, you have the humanoid face that's super blank, which I kind of tend to like those more just because it brings a little bit of humanity to the character, yeah. But also, like, you're not seeing what they're about to do because there's that blank slate. But you also have things like Friday the 13th where like his mask kind of changes because he's just grabbing and sticking on his face whatever he wants. I feel like there's a couple more movies that do that. And then there's been a couple masks in horror that are like the Dominatrix kind of leather kink mask that I'm like, what is that doing in here? Mm-hmm. Like the Collector. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the one that I'm thinking of. Yeah. I don't really know what the purpose of those are because I'm like, now you're bringing like your weird kinks into this movie, and we don't want them.
Yeah. So I mean, some of like the more recent horror masks that have been in slasher films that I've actually enjoyed. I thought there was a great mask in the film Hush. If you guys know what the Hush mask looked like, I thought that was a great mask. I really think the masks that are in The Strangers,
yes,
are all great.
100% agree.
More recently, the Grabber, I think is what he was called in Black Phone. I thought
that was just a Trump mask.
Oh shit! The Grabber.
The pussy.
Come on. my whole train of thought just went just out my ears. And then not as great, but the Purge masks are in there as well. Like if we're talking recent masks, those are the ones that I can kind of like dig up and think of. But I also don't think they touch iconically on any level. Like I think the Ghostface mask is, while it's simple, it's effective. So it does its job. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a mask that you can, really say to anybody, hey, what's the Ghostface mask from? And they'll say Scream, but you'll say, hey, what's the mask from, Hush called? And nobody's going to know the name of that.
Yeah.
Do you think like villains are scarier when they have a mask on or when they just kind of like leave it like they're just out raw dog in the world? Like
my God.
I think that there is an element of unknown with them wearing a mask because at some point during these films, they're going to get unmasked. And there's that extra level of who's beneath that and what are they doing this for or whatever. Whereas if it's just a quick reveal, then it's like, okay, there's that and we're done. So I feel like the mask does give it a little bit more of an element of horrifyingness.
Was Art the Clown wearing a mask or was that just face paint?
That was face paint. But okay. I mean, you could consider a mask.
Yeah, there was elements because he had, his nose was obviously a prosthetic and some other things. So, I mean, you could consider it a mask.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Patrick.
I was going to say, there's a couple that still resonate with me. Sam from Trick or Treat.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a good one.
It's a really good one. And I think that one works for me because it's a kid as opposed to an adult. Well, I assume it's a kid because of its
short size. People exist. Hello.
I know. That's what I said. I assume it's a kid. But that is effective for me on that one. There's an older movie called, what was it, The Town?
The Town That Dreaded Sundown.
Yeah, Town That Dreaded Sundown, where the killer was basically just a flour sack over his head with eyes cut out.
Right.
And so for me, that was very effective because just because of the simplicity of it. Yep. I didn't have to sit there and think about, is this guy totally demented, and then put together a very intricate mask like the guy in the black phone? No, this is just a guy who's simple, and his basic instinct is just to kill. And then the last one I wanted to bring up is just because of the movie itself, is from Leslie Vernon, Behind the Mask.
Oh, yeah, that's a great mask.
Because, you know, he even talked about why he created it and everything else. And there's, another example of a very simple mask that is very effective.
I feel like I should be more pro mask since my favorite band is Slipknot, but I don't know. It just, it totally depends on the movie, because there are some movies that the killer's wearing a mask and it just doesn't vibe with me for some reason. Like more like realistic, like serial killer type movies, I don't really want the killer to wear a mask, because that's the horror of it, is this person is just your FedEx guy, your neighbor, your whatever. Like, so right. Them wearing a mask, I just don't like. So to me, like, putting a mask on it just puts it more in like that kind of slashery vibe, and if that's not the movie I'm chasing, I don't really want it.
So a mask can take you out of the movie, Maddie?
Not totally, but it's just, it's something that I just register, and to me it kind of changes the tone of the movie I'm watching. Yeah, I don't know. To me, I just, as I said, just have it in my head that a movie with a mask is going to be more like slashery versus like a movie about BTK. He didn't run around wearing a mask.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? So I guess the one thing, like The Strangers, kind of lives in that kind of like gray area category, because I don't really get like slasher vibes from The Strangers. That's more like psychological.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And I think that's the difference between the two. Like you were talking about that, and I kept thinking American Psycho. He didn't wear a mask, and that was very much a psychological killing movie versus, you know, he was killing people, but it wasn't slasher style killing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I just, the mask's got to fit the vibe.
Yeah, I agreed.
Cool. Anything else on that topic? Anybody wants to drop? Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
I was just going to say, I think, the older William Shatner gets, the closer to the mask he looks.
Is there a mask that would stand out to you that you'd be like, if I came face to face with that mask in the dark alley, I would just be like, that's the one I don't want to deal with?
No, anybody wearing a mask in the dark alley, I don't want to talk to them.
From any of these iconic horror masks is what I'm talking about, Maddie, though. Like any of these.
I mean, I'd avoid them, sure, but I would think anybody that's wearing, you know, like a Michael Myers or just the hockey mask or any of that, it's just someone who is showing no originality whatsoever, you know. But if somebody just has like a flowery sack with buttons sewed onto it, that would scare the hell out of me, probably.
Yeah.
Now I'm just picturing Patrick like in a dark alley, someone comes down with like hockey mask, and he's like, no originality, none. Yeah. That's no. On your tombstone,
just,
last
just drop
words.
The knife, we're done here.
Yeah, just
you're played out, sir.
Cool. Well, speaking of shitty masks, let's talk about our feature film for the day. So this week we watched a film from 2023 called Totally Killer. Patrick, do you have the deets?
I do have the deets. Totally Killer, from 2023, runtime 1 hour and 46 minutes, showing on Prime Video. When the infamous Sweet 16 killer returns 35 years after his first murder spree to claim another victim, 17-year-old Jamie accidentally travels back in time to 1987, determined to stop the killer before he can start. IMDb rating 6.5 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 86%. Audience score 77%.
Let's start with, maybe we won't start with that. I'll hit that at the end. Maddie, what I'm going to pick on you first, because I feel like I know how you feel this movie was. and I feel like I know how this is going to go. So I'm going to pick on Maddie first.
So I will fully admit, I don't feel like I gave this movie the fairest shot that I could have. Because I watched the trailer and I was like, before I watched it, I was like, this is cringy as fuck. I am going to hate this. So I waited a couple days before I watched it because I was like, you know, I don't want to be prejudiced against this. I'm going to try to go in with like a new, it's 2024, new year, new me. But I didn't like this very much. A lot of it was just, I liked the premise of it. You know, it was interesting. It kind of mashed up a lot of different things, like the slasher element, the time travel element, it had like some good like comedy foundations. But to me, it just felt very flat. I thought I was going to 45 minute this and I didn't. So I liked it a little bit more than I thought I was going to, but I feel like stop licking yourself. Hey, I feel like all the jokes were written by 13-year-old boys. Like literally all of them were just, it was just like, I was like, I cannot handle another blowjob joke in this fucking thing. Like it was just, the comedy, the dialogue just felt very, very flat for me. And then that goofy ass mask was so dumb. And then like the end was very Scooby-Doo like, and I was just, I will give this movie props because I feel like a lot of movies that deal with time travel, they come back and everything is totally the same except for like the good thing that happened. And they did have like, oh, you came back and there were changes. And I appreciated that because I feel like that's so weird when like you come back from a time travel movie and everything is totally the same except for so-and-so is alive. So yeah. I appreciated those little details, but overall this movie was just not for me.
Sure. Actually, that went a lot better than I thought it was going to go. So thank you, Maddie, for not 45 minuting this movie and finishing it. Patrick.
Oh, gosh. This, to me, felt like a Nickelodeon horror film. A lot of it is because the casting was not good. In the sense of, and I think Maddie, you brought this up in our Facebook Messenger chat where, you know, we're supposed to be looking at 16, 17 year olds and it's obvious they're college age. So that's kind of why it rang more towards that Nickelodeon feel to me. In this day and age, there's really no reason we can't have age appropriate actors playing these roles. The concept was original. In the sense of applying Back to the Future to the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
So I did appreciate that. Where it fell short was in some of the writing, since they were going back to the 1980s, it seemed like they were trying to insert dialogue-driven humor from the 1980s, which is just not effective nowadays. It just seemed trite. And speaking of going back into the 80s, I think this film was done by someone who had no idea what the 80s were like. Having graduated from high school in 86 and looking at, you know, just 1 year later, they threw in some music that was from the era, but they just didn't capture what the 80s were like or felt like. I don't remember seeing any big hair in the film at all, and big hair was one of the icons for the 80s, both men and women. I like Maddie, I appreciate the fact that when she did come back, life had changed. It wasn't an easy return. The opening, I felt worked really, really well when Claire from Modern Family had to fight off her attacker. That was a very, very solid opening. However, the way that the movie was filmed, it was all very bright throughout, even in the darker scenes. Everything was still very bright, so it almost felt like a made-for-TV horror film for me. It was very safe. They didn't take a lot of chances with it. And I also couldn't get past the lead actress. I can't remember her last name, first name, Kiernan, because she was in the Sabrina series on Netflix mm-hmm. or Hulu or one of those.
Yeah.
And it was hard for me to get past the Sabrina series that she was in, or even thinking about her time on Mad Men. So there were a lot of things to keep me from probably enjoying it like I could have.
Cool. Greg.
This movie was Hot Tub Time Machine with a knife and a crappy mask. It follows the footpath of a traditional slasher very closely. As soon as she goes back into the 1980s, it follows the timeline. And I think that's why I enjoyed it. I did enjoy this movie. It is a fun watch, but it is not very original. I think that it's the fact that it's put in a nice little slasher box is why I enjoyed it, because I enjoy those slasher type movies. But yeah, there's not a lot of originality to it. The characters are okay. It felt a little bit more like a family drama tied into a slasher movie. And I feel like if you're going to do something, you should go one way or the other, I guess. It is an enjoyable watch. I probably won't go back and watch it for a third time. I watched it twice just to make sure I was intelligently talking about what I'm being able to talk about here. But I don't think I need to see it again. It's good for a one watch.
Yeah. Everybody's kind of touched on it, but you know, for me, it was Scream meets Back to the Future. It was one Huey Lewis and the News song away from just being a lot of fun for me. The only thing that I felt that I didn't like about the film was it overstayed its welcome at an hour and 45 minutes. That they could have find spot. They could have found spots to definitely cut out or cut down. Mm-hmm. For me, that mask, again, not the greatest mask on the planet, but like the mask also screamed 80s to me as well. As a trick or treater back in the 80s, we wore those shitty like plastic mask with the band that you put around your head. Mm-hmm. And while this is like, you know, a full on mask, it still had that like that 80s kind of plasticky like look to me. And so that's, while I wouldn't give it a pass as a great mask, I feel like it felt right in that decade. I watched this back when we did our 31 Days of Horror, when Greg and I did that. I had a good time then. I had a good time now. Again, it's a film that, you know, Maddie hit, like, yeah, it overdid a little bit on the blowjob jokes. It overdid on, you know, the guy, the jock grabbing his crotch like 45,000 times. You know, I can get past those things. We don't need all of those. Yeah, it kind of felt like it could have been written by a 13-year-old boy. Yeah, but once in a while, you know, when we sit down and we watch true horror films and we watch dark horror films, sometimes for me, I need that light at the end of a horror film. And while I feel like our light is about to fade because I've seen the list that Maddie threw in our group. the darkness is coming. I enjoy once in a while a lighthearted horror comedy, and that's what Totally Killer gave me. So we pointed out all the faults, and I agree with all the faults 100%. Like I said, the fault that I'll never throw at it is, you know, it's a horror comedy, and I knew what I was walking into. So that's my hot take.
Yeah, that's, and I think I said this, maybe I said this last time, maybe I was just thinking it, who knows. I just, like, I'm not saying I totally hate the horror comedy genre. I do. But I just like my horror comedies a teeny bit darker, because you get in this thing where this was a comedy where a couple people got stabbed. Like, there's no horror elements. There's nothing in there. There's not even like a little bitty jump scare. And then, as I said, that's where you get these movies that these Nickelodeon ass horror movies, as Patrick says, where you just, like, there's nothing there to call it horror. Like, people die in regular movies. No one gives a shit. No one calls that a horror movie. Marley and Me is not a horror movie. Like, you know what I mean? Just, so that's kind of where, like, as I said, this just isn't a movie I ever thought I would enjoy, and I was right. As I said, I probably could have gone in with a better attitude, but that's most of the things in my life. Where, I don't know, just the jokes didn't land for me. I've never been a 13-year-old boy, so maybe that's just where I'm getting. But yeah, there was just, as I said, this movie was just a little non-carbonated soda for me. It was just flat. There wasn't anything. Yeah. Like, I don't think it was a horrible movie. And I actually looked up while Patrick was talking, and the director's 50. So she would have enjoyed some of the 80s. And as you said, there's no, like, 80s elements really in there. The kids all look like they could have been from our time. Like, yeah, the hair styles were off. Yeah, the clothes were off.
The director would have been a teen, preteen, mm-hmm. right in the 80s there. Yeah, it kind of felt like the sparkling water of the 80s, where, you know, just had that hint of a flavor, but ultimately the carbonation makes you sick.
Yeah.
And walking back a little bit, Maddie hit on the whole Scooby-Doo ending. I will agree with that. The ending 100% fell flat for me. It did leave me a little bit like, God damn it. As soon as it said Scooby-Doo ending, and I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. It was 100% Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
So
one thing that I did enjoy about this movie, and you can deep dive all over the internet on if you'd like, was that he had one of the characters in there had a true crime podcast. And I feel that that's something that needs to be talked about more, because there are a lot of very, very unethical and just kind of in bad taste true crime channels and podcasts out there. And I feel like they kind of like humorously called that out in the movie. And I will say I enjoyed that, because that's something that I said should be really talked about more, because the true crime community is toxic as fuck. And I feel like they kind of highlighted that a little bit, and I appreciated that.
I also like the fact that the girl was making a time machine out of an old race car, like, video game. I thought that was kind of fun too. So, yeah. Anything else about Totally Killer?
Nothing for me.
Nothing. Well, I'm gonna make a promise that I hope we can keep some darker days are coming. Some darker films are coming, and the Cocaine Bears and the Totally Killers are about to kind of disappear. And like I said, I've seen the list, and some darker days are coming. So, yeah, I think that's it for us. So, Greg the Movie Guy, and Maddie the Scream Queen, and Patrick the Doctor of Everything Else. I am Josh.
Josh, we gotta rate this fucking thing.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, don't edit that. We're gonna walk back. I'm walking back.
Let's go back in time.
Yeah.
We're gonna jump into that photo booth
in our Gravitron.
We're gonna go back and rate this thing. Greg, what are you gonna give it?
I was just sitting here thinking about it. I would throw this movie into a starter pack. And because I throw it into a starter pack, I would probably give it a 6.56.
Yeah, it's starter pack. That's a great starter pack movie.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, I think it would ease somebody into that slasher, that horror comedy slasher genre, really quite nicely. So 5 or 6.
Cool, Maddie.
I'll give it a 5. I'm not gonna totally shit on it, but one great.
Patrick.
Well, I mean, we just got done reviewing a horror comedy in the last episode, in which I gave it a 6, And I don't think this was as good as Cocaine Bear, so I've got to drop it down to a 5.
Well, I am going to live out here on this lonely, lonely island by myself and with no way to be saved. And I'm going to go with the audience score and hang out in that 7.5 area. That's where I'm landing.
That's fair.
Excellent.
Yeah, so going about it again for the Doctor of Filmonomics, Greg, Maddie the Scream Queen, the Doctor of everything else, I am intern Josh, if you couldn't tell, intern. I make mistakes, I forget things.
We'll forgive you, though.
We'll see you next time on the Midnight Breakfast.